When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to the White Towel Podcast. I'm Paul Chapman, joined by Ed Willis. Just want to give you a reminder that Jeans Day is coming up on May 2nd. Please join Canuck Ambassador Brock Besser as one of the big supporters of Jeans Day. To support Children's Hospital, go to jeansday.ca to find out more. Ed, we were going to call this episode of The White Towel, Old Men Yelling at Clouds, as we were talking about what we were going to discuss.
Yeah, because Get Off My Lawn never really got any traction, so we're going to move up to the next logical thing.
So, we'll talk some Canucks, we'll talk playoffs, we'll throw some Giants in there as well, just in terms of the local market and how things are going. I did want to revisit a little bit last week's discussion, because it seems to have got some traction. And let's be clear, you got a piece of information that there had been contact between Mike Gillis and Francesco Aquilini, and that's all. It's not suggesting he's going to get the job, that he's the front runner, but it was interesting that he was contacted. And yet this has now been a full 7 days of discussion in other local media. I find it amusing. Amongst other things.
I think it speaks to the vacuum which exists around the Canucks right now. So any little tidbit that floats across people's radar screen, they're going to grab and run with. It's a piece of intel. That's all it is. I think it's interesting because I think it says something about where the Canucks are as an organization, that they are casting about, that I think it's pretty clear they are looking for a president, or at least entertaining that notion, whether or not they go down that road, whether or not they find the right guy. And everybody knows the names out there. But I just think it's interesting that, you know, that contact was made. I think it's also interesting when you look around the NHL, because there's a couple of shoes that have to drop here. And I think once they, I think this is again theorizing here, you know, the Canucks situation will be a lot more clear once Edmonton gets their guy, once the Rangers name their president. And then, you know, I think, I'm not 100% sure of this, I know Seattle has been making noise about hiring their GM in advance of whatever year it is they're going to start. So there are, a couple of shoes that have to drop before maybe they get to the Canucks. And I think that will be worth watching here over the next month.
Do you think that process, Ed, is impacting what's going on here at all? Like, looking at what – I think Vegas changed the conversation for everyone with how well things worked out there. And that has to piss off a lot of current owners. And so if you're looking around going, I don't want that to happen in Seattle, is that shaping their thought at all?
It's shaping Seattle's or
no,
shaping other
No, shaping
teams?
Vancouver's thought. That they're looking at what might happen in Seattle and thinking, hold on, should we be in on something here?
I think there's two responses there. I think there's kind of like that sort of immediate visceral one that, you know, God, here we are. We've been wandering in the wilderness the last 4 years. These idiots show up, give the NHL $600 million. They get a ready-made team. They're in the Stanley Cup final. And they're in the space of not even a whole season, they're an elite NHL team. So I think there's that. I don't know what kind of lessons you can derive from that, though, because like the whole expansion process was so skewed in Las Vegas's favor, and then they exploited those circumstances so expertly with George McPhee, you know, just like the puppet master, making these amazing moves. So I don't know, like the Canucks, no other team will be in that position. And I dare say Seattle won't be in that position, because if the other 30 GMs in the NHL weren't paying attention what happened in Las Vegas, then there is a real problem there. So I think it adds a little pressure, and I think the presence of a you know, competition in Seattle adds pressure too. I'm just not sure how that affects the whole decision-making process going forward.
My fear, I guess, for the Canucks or for Canuck fans would be the idea that the plan isn't really as unified as it looked, as we've seen what's happened over the last couple of years. I mean, obviously you get young players excel on the ice. That's a great story and you think you're on the right track. But when I consistently look at teams that are doing well in all pro sports, it's sort of all singing from the same hymn sheet. Is it fair to say that's not happening here, or especially if you're adding another piece to the puzzle?
Yeah, I think, you know, it depends on how you want to frame it, but I think there's a real fear that the Canucks are being left behind in the fan base. I think there are clear trends taking place in the NHL, and it involves how you build your organization, who you hire, the various departments you have, how you go about the process of drafting and developing player personnel, pro scouting, all those things. And I look at that Canucks operation, and yeah, they've got some good people in place, but it's a kind of a minimalist operation compared to 95% of the other teams in the league. And I think it's starting to show up. And I just look at that situation in Utica this year, and I was kind of, full disclosure, I'm a fan of Ryan Johnson's. I think he does a good job. I think he's been dealt a shitty hand there, whatever. But I think that really is shaping up to be a tipping point. What happened in Utica this season, the failure of those, like the players like Gadjevich and Cole Lynn to really develop at all this season, trading Jonathan Dahlin, that's three misses in a row. I think that's going to really shape up to be like I said, a real tipping point, a real talking point for Canucks fans going forward. I have to stop saying going forward, don't I? I know there's a whole debate about that, whether the appropriateness of it. It just, I don't know, kind of sounds right. It rolls off the tongue.
Well, you don't want to go backward.
No, I suppose not.
Forward looking, you could say, instead of going forward looking.
Yeah. Okay.
Our dear departed friend. Well, departed as in left the building. Jonathan McDonald used to always say that, along with pondering. Forward-looking. Anyway, as we are forward-looking to the process here, let's look backwards a little bit. The Utica debate to me is an interesting one because, again, if you look at the elite-level players that the Canucks appear to have or close to elite with, we all know Horvat, sure. Besser, Hughes, Pettersson. You appear to have looked after your goaltending. The success of, as we look at the teams that are doing well in the playoffs, the success of this team really is going to consist of those solid next level guys. And that is all the guys you've mentioned, whether you throw Jet Wu into the mix, Gadjevich. This whole development model, I know the old school hockey thing that we heard, you have to earn your minutes, you have to learn how to win. Whereas you see other organizations going, look, we don't care what our win-loss record is with our farm team. We want these guys to get minutes. We want them to be in meaningful situations. The wins and losses will look after themselves. Is that model change? Do you sense that there's a bit of a culture clash a little bit in the NHL in terms of how you treat your development model?
I'm not sure about that because I think there's some universalities that have been in play and always will be in play in the NHL. But I do look at some of the successful franchises and look at their model. And the one that springs to mind is Tampa Bay. 4, 5, 6 years ago, I don't have the exact date off the top of my head, you know, their American League team featured guys like Ryan Johnson, Palat, Alex Kaloyan, that next wave that the Canucks so desperately need to develop, and they played together. This is embarrassing. I can't even remember what team they played for, but Trent Cull, the coach in Utica, was an assistant on that team. They played together. They had a lot of success together. They moved up to Tampa virtually all at the same time. And supplied those support level, but not just like really good support level players too. And that's what the Canucks need to have. They just can't rely on picking like lottery picks. There has to be depth and flow and everything in the organization. So as much as Gadjevich and Lynn are kind of one off, you look down the road and as you said, they've got Tyler Madden coming. They've got Jet Wu coming. They've got the Rathbone kid coming. They've got Michael DiPietro coming. Mikey DiPietro coming. That should be the next wave. That should be the support system. And there's one thing that's clearly missing from the Canucks right now. It's depth. in the organization and in the NHL team. So, you know, they've got some pieces in place. Now, can they develop them to the point where they make an impact on the NHL team? That's a big, big question. And it's ultimately maybe the biggest test for the Benning administration.
Is Jim Benning the guy to run the whole show, or does there need to be someone above him and he's leaning more towards scouting?
The question with Jim isn't his, you know, ability to scout talent or assess talent, all those things. I think, you know, virtually everybody agrees he's a superb scout. He's an elite level scout. He understands that part of the game, but does he have the vision to put together an organization to do all the things you need to do? And, you know, scouting and assessing talent is obviously a huge component of that, but it is so by far not the only one. And you have to be able to, like, you know, build this matrix where you've got people in place, really good people in place, overlooking all these different areas, whether it's analytics or whether it's player development or whether it's team search, whatever it is. And there's got to be kind of like a homogenous whole to that. And that's what I see in the really good franchises around the NHL that, quite frankly, I don't see in the Canucks right now. It's funny. I think we were going to talk about the playoffs later on, but
yeah,
I was
right now actually.
Yeah, we'll do this segue then. I mean, I look at Dallas and the way they've developed that team over the last 3-4 years, and there should be a model there for the Canucks. They're not a massive budget operation. I understand you're smirking because of the ownership situation.
Well, I was just going to say, can you call Francesco Aquilini and tell him that to give his buddy Tom Gilardi a call and say, hey, we'd like to study what you're doing down there a little bit.
But it's not a massive operation, but, you know, they built that team. I'm pretty sure the only top five pick they have in the lineup that they drafted and developed is Miro Heiskanen, who's just dazzling for me. He's been one of the 2-3 breakout players in these playoffs for me so far. They traded for Sagan, but that's a little different animal. But they developed these guys like Hintz and Dickinson and Faxa. Faxa was a first rounder, I get that. But the other guys are, you know, I believe both Hintz and Dickinson were second. I know Hintz was a second rounder. Dickinson in there somewhere. The Lindell kid, who's, despite his, that was a little embarrassing, that act in game three, I guess it was. Yeah, the diving. But he's a hell of an NHL defenseman. So you've got that. And then they had those established players. They had Ben. They had Radulov. They had Sagan. But that's what they did. They're now developing that second wave. And that's what makes them so dangerous and so important in my mind.
Well, we talk about this all the time, looking like which model should you follow, you know, draft. And all that stuff's important. But if I look at Columbus and Dallas, two teams that are surprising that they are where they are, frankly, it's because they had balls. I mean, getting Sagan, you go back to the Sagan deal, that took balls to make a big move like that. Obviously, we know what happened in Columbus going, oh, these guys aren't going to re-sign here. Maybe we should do the safe thing, which I thought they should do, and peel off for more draft picks and reloaded. They said, nope, push the chips to the center of the table, and it's paying off for them. I mean, sometimes I think, whether it's Jim Benning or whoever, I think there's you look at the Leafs. The Leafs, they made one move at the trade deadline and they desperately needed help on defense. And you know what? You have to give up something to get something. Yeah. But again, another example is Nashville. I look at Nashville, look like they were a hair away from the Stanley Cup and haven't been able to get back there. And in fact, are getting further away.
Right.
I think when, as a general manager, when you sense you have a chance to go all in, I think you should go all in.
Well, I think so. And so I guess the question we can ask, are the Canucks there right now? I think they're getting there. I think this offseason will tell a real story about whether they go and sign that top six forward they talked about or trade for an upgrade on their defense. I think that positions them. But I'm sorry, I see the eight teams that made the playoffs in the West, and some of them have started to decline. You mentioned Nashville. I get that. I don't think Calgary's as good as they showed. They had an awful lot of things go right for them in the regular season.
But they still have an awful lot of talent.
Okay, no,
for sure.
No, 100%. And this is the point I was going to make. I still don't see the Canucks being anywhere near that level. I think they can sort of move kind of to the near the top of the next level, the teams that are pushing. I think, you know, when they talk about making that step forward next year, to me, that's what that step forward would be. If they make the playoffs next season, they should build a statue to Jim Benning in front of Rogers Arena. But
do you put it next to the Roger Nielsen one or the Pat Quinn one?
But
How many statues do you get before you win a championship?
What's it say about this organization?
More statues than Stanley Cup appearances.
But the statue is somebody waving a white flag in front of the arena. Anyways, there comes a point when you have to stop being all about drafting and developing.
Yeah.
And look at all the fun young players we have, and next year, and we're there selling hope and all the rest of it. It's got to be something more than that.
But when you look around the league, that's kind of where Colorado has been for the last 5 years, and now it finally looks like it's coming together.
Fair enough. Now, they had pieces in place, and if the Canucks had anybody who compared to Nathan MacKinnon in their lineup, God bless them. But again, I look at the moves they've made around there since. You know, and they had the one piece in Duchesne that they flipped, and look at the ransom they've got coming forward. So on top of everything, they could have easily come out of this draft with the first overall pick. They're still going to get a hell of a player at four, but like Cal Makar, I'm trying to figure if I can squeeze a whole column out of this, but I'm looking at the good young defensemen that have stepped up in the playoffs this season. If Quinn Hughes is as good as Cal Makar, that's a hell of a thing for the Canucks. If he's as good as Heiskanen, that's a hell of a thing for the Canucks. It just seems these guys are like dropping out of the sky and, you know, playing at an elite level. You know, in the hottest part of the spotlight in the playoffs. And again, it kind of speaks to this whole thing about the Canucks. Yeah, they've improved in comparison to what they've been, but have they improved in comparison to the rest of the NHL?
Right, and I caught that exact example you were talking about with Duchesne and what happened in Colorado is another example of a GM going, yeah, I'm going to go for it.
Yeah.
And there are certainly lots of examples of that not paying off. I just think at some point, like, I know this is the Canucks draft, and there's no chance they're dealing their first-round pick. But I think if it wasn't at home, you'd have to seriously look at 10 and going, well, either we package some stuff and move up, or we don't see the value there for us and where we are. Let's take a chance on something else. And I think this is where the limbo that the Canucks are. Again, in context of the playoffs right now, you look at St. Louis, you look at Colorado, you look at Dallas – and they do seem far, far deeper. I mean, they all have top-end talent.
Mm-hmm.
They are far, far deeper in those other role players that have got them to the second round of the playoffs. I also look at these other teams, though, Ed, and I look at teams that have been at the top of the totem pole in the Kings and the Ducks and the Blackhawks, and they're bouncing at the bottom now, and they're coming up on the heels of the Canucks as well. So this doesn't get any easier as teams like maybe Nashville and who knows about Calgary or Winnipeg are dropping a little bit. It's only going to get more difficult for the Canucks with the teams below them who have assets as well.
Yes, correct. you are right. There's nothing further I can add to that. No, it's like it's a dogfight all over the NHL now. There's only a couple of teams you could look at and go, geez, they have no hope next year. There's just no hope at all. But you know, the Canucks, you know, they improved to the point where they went from, I'm sorry, where were they last year? I think they were, I think the progression goes 28th, 29th, 26th to 21st this year. So that's their improvement. So is the next stage to get up to 17th, 18th? I think that's kind of the direction they're headed. But again, look around the rest of the NHL, and you know they're in so tough. It's.
As we look at the teams in the playoffs, and again, there doesn't seem to be the interest in the second round overall. I think there's a ton of reasons for that, as there was in the first round. But I'm still seeing something amazingly fast and physical hockey being played. It really is. It's such a stark reminder of how plodding the regular season can be in the NHL. Who do you really like at this point, or is there a team you like? Because it seems to me to be wide open.
Yes. Yeah, no, 100%. Honestly, going into this, the team I liked, because of the momentum, because of the way they're structured, and because they had the world's most interesting coach behind the bench, was Columbus.
Yeah.
And I see the and I think that series is going to really tell a story. And I think if Columbus comes out of that, I just like, God, they're just stacked. And the thing is, the things that kind of slowed them down for a little bit in March was the players they acquired, like two key pieces at the trade deadline, and they obviously had a hard time fitting in. And there is a theory that you can change the support level of your team at the trade deadline, but it's really hard to change like your top six or your top line or your top defensive pairing. Well, they've kind of put the lie to that one in a big way, and Columbus isn't the only team, because like Duchesne has given them another elite score to go with Panarin, to go with Atkinson, who's widely underrated, to go with that crazy defense. You know, we're talking, Seth Jones, I understand, is a little different category, but he isn't that much older. He looks like the best defenseman in the NHL right now. He is a monster. So having said all that, we're only 1-1, you know, with game three going tonight, and that Boston team is a nasty bit of business. But I still like the way the Columbus is going. Further to that point, you know, you're talking about, you know, GMs who have, you know, the balls to go out and make moves and, you know, strike and push all their chips in the middle of the table. Look at the moves that were made at the trade deadline, because there is a school of thought out there. Sometimes the deal you make is better than the deal, or the deal you don't make is better than the deal you make. Look at Charlie Coyle and Johansson in Boston. Look at Duchesne. Look at the guys. Look at Gus Nyquist in San Jose. I'm just wondering if this has kind of turned that thinking on its head. And I'm just wondering, because let's face it, the trade deadline the last couple of years has been acutely boring.
Yep.
I just wonder if this is going to change things.
That was sort of my point earlier. I mean, you look at the Leafs, where it was all there for them, and they were under – I mean, yes, they lost in a Game 7 to a very good Boston team, but – you know, I think sometimes you have to give up assets.
Like, yeah,
you
no, can't, 100%.
Listen, we joke about the Raymond Ballard in a second, but that's endemic in so many teams around the league that you don't want to give up anything and you overvalue your own players. But I'm not much of a sports bettor, but man, I would love to have seen the odds if in January you put down $100 on Colorado, St. Louis, Columbus, and Carolina making the Final Four. I mean, that would be some story to be. I mean, it's already been some story with what we've seen, but Carolina has not looked out of place in the second round. Because sometimes we've seen this before. We certainly know the Canucks have benefited from it. You get a bit of an upstart, whatever the circumstances are in the first round. You catch a favorite by surprise, and you get through. All these teams in the second round, like all these series are close. I mean, I know that the Islanders are down 2-0, even though they were the home team. Those games have been close. That's what I mean, the intensity of this hockey. All these teams sort of belong. But to suggest that Carolina and Columbus would be a conference final even a month ago would have been laughable, but I can absolutely see that now.
See, for me, the other interesting thing is if you would have looked at the NHL 2-3 years ago, you could easily identify. So I can't remember. I do remember writing this. You could identify 12 to 14 teams that were in some stage of a rebuild. Now they varied a bit, but for the most part, you could. You got to identify A, by their kind of crappiness, and B, just by the youth in their lineup. But you look at that, and those teams clearly included Carolina, Columbus, Colorado. Who else is still alive?
Dallas, yeah, Islanders.
Like, St. Louis, not so much. They were a little further along. Dallas, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, they've all taken the next step, and I think Canucks fans can legitimately look at their team and wonder, is it going to be our turn? Are we going to be one of those teams that have taken that, and in the Canucks' case, it's going to be two steps, to go from just kind of nowhere team to a team that can compete for a play, to a team that can actually make the playoffs and maybe even make some create some damage once they're there?
Sports cliches are kind of funny. And
hockey,
yeah, absolutely. But hockey ones even more so. This whole thing now that everyone, like someone puts something out there and everyone goes, that's a good point, and then we beat it to death. This idea that by American Thanksgiving, we know what you are, and there'll be a little bit of jogging. At American Thanksgiving, nay, Christmas, how did St. Louis and Dallas and Columbus and Colorado, like, how did all these teams look? I say that specifically because we know that on January 5th, St. Louis was the worst team in the NHL. Yeah. I also look at what was happening in Dallas, where both the superstar players there were given a public roasting by the GM, and all of a sudden it was like, they're going to want out. This team's going to fall apart. But I look at some astute in-season management drastically changed the fortunes of a couple of teams here that are now steaming towards the conference finals. And you got to wonder if, again, let's get out of this conservative, that's the way we've always done it before approach.
I think we're kind of revisiting the same point. And I'm not sure if sitting here on April 30th, 2019, the Canucks are there right now. I'm wondering if they are on July 1st, 2019. I wonder if they're there on like October 1st, 2019. I sure as hell wonder where they will be at next year's trade deadline, so I don't have that date on the top of my head. But they're rapidly getting to that point. Like I said, they can't sell this draft and development, hope for next year model in perpetuity. somewhere along the lines, they have to show something tangible. And they offered a bit of a tease this season. They've got more coming. Fine. God bless you. We get that. Now show us some real, show us something substantial.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be an awful lot of fun if the hockey hotbeds of Columbus and Carolina are your Eastern Conference finalists. I got to tell you.
I'm sorry. I've actually been to the Carolina. I've covered a couple of playoff series in Carolina, including the Stanley Cup final in 06, which is a wildly underrated Stanley Cup final between Edmonton and you have to have been there to understand how in the middle of the nowhere that rink is. And the best part is NC State's football stadium is right next to it. So there's actually a complex there. There's a reason for people to go there. Now, this is going back a number of years. I don't know if they've developed the area around there anymore. But driving in there, there were acres and acres of farmer's field, and the odor wafting down there was pungent with manure and other fertilizers used to promote agricultural growth. Raleigh itself is a really cool little town, but that's all it is. I mean, yeah. Jesus, you know, you can throw a bowling ball down there at 11 o'clock on a Friday night and have no fear of hitting anything. So I understand it's a whole area, and it's university, and it's the New South, and there's a tech development thing. And so, you know, within an hour of Raleigh, there's all kinds of neat things going on. But really where that stadium is, and we were trying to figure out while we were covering that series, okay, if they have a parade, where is it going to go? Down the main street of Raleigh? Don't think so.
You know, it speaks to the whole Don Cherry bunch of jerks type thing. Like, look what they did to engage fan base. And I think that obviously brought the players together. And I know they're not doing the storm surge thing for the playoffs, but they twigged onto something special with that team. And it's engaged people. And I find that they're a very fun team to watch.
Oh, 100%.
Quickly before we go, I did want a word on the Giants. You know, obviously it's not filling the NHL void, but it's a great story, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had hopes for Tyler Benson, and they'd famously won the Memorial Cup and got some great alumni in the NHL, had big names that people were identifying with the franchise, but they went through that sort of dead period. And Bowen Byram has gone from being like, oh yeah, he could be a really good player as we go into the season, to be like, holy shit, this guy is a very, very good player and will be gone long before the Canucks get to their 10th pick. This is a good Giants team, and it's a good story.
It is. You know, that dead period you're talking about, I think it was called the 2010s. It was really for that decade, they were virtually irrelevant. They had a couple of spikes in there, and they did show improvement last year. They had Ty Ronning. They had Tyler Benson. And it's funny, you know, you talk to them, and they figured this year they were kind of setting the table for next year. I don't think anybody anticipated this playoff run this year. I don't think they anticipated that Byron would be as good as he have. They've got a goalie, David Tendek, who is really, for me, the reason why they are where they are. He has been the best goalie in every series they played so far. And that was a huge, huge development in the series against Spokane, because there really wasn't much to choose. 5-on-5 in the lineups and anything. But, you know, as it often does in the playoffs, that goaltending is so important. So the other neat thing about the Giants is, I'm not sure Bowen Byram's ready to play regularly in the NHL. It depends on who drafts him, and, you know, it depends on the situation. But it's conceivable that defense could come back en masse next year, and it might be better than the Vancouver Canucks defense when they've got Byram and the Plouffe kid, and they've got the kid who's been drafted. I'm sorry, whose name escapes me right now. But they are good, and they are fast, and they are deep. And the other star that's been identified is the coach, Michael Dick, who kind of came from out of nowhere. He's a really interesting cat. He was kind of one of the star coaches in the WHL. He took a step back. He started coaching his son's youth team, and he became a day trader, a commodities trader, and did that for 6-7 years, kind of fell off the grid. But, you know, he had a connection with the Giants, had a connection with Toygo, had a connection with the GM, Barclay Parnetta. They hired him, and it looks like he is going to be a rising star in the coaching profession. So, like you said, it's a fun atmosphere. I always get confused because I'm never sure where I should stop to change my clock when I pass into the new time zone going into Langley. Other than that, it really is fun. So, and I'd urge people to go out there, but they're sold out anyway.
Great stuff. Anyway, we'll have to leave it there. We're getting the evil eye from producer Darren Mukwana. We're running over time. But please subscribe to The White Towel through Apple Podcasts. Give us a rating, and we'll be back to conjure up more news next week.